Our podcast reviews well-known movies and contains spoilers. The podcast may contain mature subject matter and mature language. Listener discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Quiet on set. Places, everybody. And action.
It's time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today's movie is a fan request from our friend Justin. The movie, the 2012 comedy Ted, starring Mark Wahlberg and Seth MacFarlane. And with me, our Ted, the reviewer.
You know what I'd like to do to her? Something I call the Dirty Fonzie.
And Ken.
No matter how big of a splash you make in this world, whether you're Corey Feldman, Frankie Muniz, Justin Bieber, or a talking teddy bear, eventually nobody gives a shit.
So true, so true. And I'm Eric. Company's turning 20, huh? So you can bang it, but you can't get it drunk. And that's right, we're talking Ted, probably one of the dirtiest, raunchiest comedies in the last 15 years. A fan favorite,
years.
Of course. 100 years, ever and ever. So tell us a synopsis, this one, Ken, for anyone who's been living under a rock the last 15 years.
When John Bennett was a little boy, he made a wish that Ted, his beloved teddy bear, would come alive. 30 years later, foul-mouthed Ted is still John's constant companion, much to the chagrin of Lori, John's girlfriend. Though Lori's displeasure is exacerbated by a pair of constant consumption of beer and weed, she's not the one who's most disappointed with John. It may take the intervention of John's boyhood toy to help him grow up at last.
Cool. All right. During this podcast, we're going to refer to Ted the movie and Ted the human. Ted the human, give us the particulars.
Okay. Ted the movie is directed by Seth MacFarlane with a screenplay by Seth MacFarlane, Alex Sulkin, and Wellesley Wild. It has a running time of 106 minutes, a release date of June 29th, 2012. It had a budget of $65 million and a box office gross of $549.4 million. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a critic score of a fresh 69%, which is ironic.
69, dude.
That is so ironic.
And an audience score of 73%. Ted stars Mark Wahlberg as John Bennett, Bretton Manley as the young John Bennett, Seth MacFarlane as Ted. He voices the teddy bear, Zane Cowens as a young Ted's voice, and Tara Strong, who's uncredited as Ted's I Love You function. It also stars Mila Kunis as Lori, John's girlfriend, Joel McHale as Rex, Lori's manager, Giovanni Ribisi as Donnie, Aidan Minks as Robert, and Patrick Warburton as Guy. And we also have some stars who make guest appearances here. We have Sam Jones as himself, Ryan Reynolds as Jared, Nora Jones as herself, Tom Skerritt, and Patrick Stewart as the narrator.
Crazy. Just some celebs there just throwing their weight into this movie.
Some great cameos.
So, it is. It is. So when was the first time you saw this one, Ted the Human?
We saw this in the movie theater.
We?
Yeah, me and my wife, we saw this in the movie theater.
Nice.
It had nice. To. There was no way around it. I love Seth MacFarlane. I think Seth MacFarlane's hilarious. I've loved the Family Guy, especially the Star Wars episodes. It's a movie about a teddy bear. I'm Ted. Come on.
Yeah. Foul-mouthed teddy bear. It's your life story.
Exactly.
Yeah. How about you, Ken?
F&A, Cotton. F&A.
I think this was a cable watch. I kind of put it off for a little bit just because I'm not a big vulgarity type of moviegoer. So at least back then I wasn't. For me at that point, it was pretty off-putting, that type of movie. So I wasn't watching that kind of movie at that time.
So ironic. It's all he watches now.
I probably watched this a couple years after it came out.
Cool. Yeah, you know, for me, I don't know the exact time or date or year. I rented it on DVD, that I remember. and I fell in love with it, as well as the sequel. I thought that was funny too. But this one I really, really fell in love with, and I've seen it, half a dozen times, maybe a dozen times. I haven't seen it, though, in the last couple years, so just watching it again just really made me laugh, made my week, I got to say. I forgot a lot about the movie, a lot of the subtleties and some of the one-liners that this movie is really made of. Yeah, all right. Ken, part one.
1985. 8-year-old John Bennett is a friendless only child living in the suburb of Boston, who wishes for his new Christmas gift, a jumbo teddy bear named Ted, to come to life and become his best friend. The wish coincides with a shooting star and comes true. Word spreads, and Ted briefly becomes a celebrity. 27 years later, John, now 35, and Ted are still living together in an apartment in Boston with John's girlfriend, Lori Collins, and are still staunch companions, enjoying a hedonistic life. As John and Lori's 4-year anniversary approaches, Lori hopes to marry John, but feels that they cannot move forward in life with Ted around. John is hesitant about making Ted leave, but is later persuaded to act when they find Ted at home with a group of prostitutes, one defecating on the floor after their anniversary dinner. I got something on my hand.
Ted, you've been there before, right? Ted the human? Yeah. It's like,
of course.
Yeah. It's like looking in a mirror. I
defecating
it.
On the floor? Sure.
Yeah. Prostitutes, defecation. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sounds good.
It's John a Saturday Ted. Night.
John finds Ted his own apartment and a job at a grocery store, where Ted begins dating his co-worker, Tammy Lynn. Lori learns that John has been skipping work, using her as an excuse to continue to spend time with Ted. John and Lori are invited to a party put on by Lori's womanizing manager, Rex, who is in love with Lori and himself, despite her rejecting him. However, Ted lures John away to a party at his apartment with the offer to meet Sam Jones, the star of their favorite film, Flash Gordon. John intends to stay only for 5 minutes, but gets caught up in the occasion. Lori finds John there and kicks him out of their apartment, breaking up with him. A devastated John angrily blames Ted for ruining his relationship with Lori and disowns him. And that's the end of part one.
Nice. You know, the one thing I love about this movie, I call this movie a equal opportunity offender. Everyone is on the table. And I love how the movie starts off, you know, right around Christmas with the neighborhood kids beating up the Jewish kid. I mean, it's so wrong, but it's so funny.
I love the line.
The Jewish kid is like, even he doesn't want John to play.
Even he doesn't want to be friends with him. Right, yeah. Yeah. It's...
I love the line from the little Jewish kid. He goes, why would he want to do that?
Yeah, why would Jesus want to beat me up? Yes, yes, it's classic. It's an equal opportunity offender movie. Everyone's on the table.
Seth MacFarlane is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's great that they bring Patrick Stewart on to narrate the film. Only thing better is probably James Earl Jones or Morgan Freeman. Those are the only two that you probably could get an upgrade. But I think Patrick Stewart is kind of perfect for this type of.
Well, the reason he's the narrator is because he's from Family Guy. Yeah,
right.
Has a good relationship with the Star Trek Next Generation cast. In fact, he has his own TV show called The Orville. The Orville Way, which is
still on, or has that been finally canceled?
I think it's finally canceled. They had strong seasons, and it actually, to be honest with you, is one of the best Star Trek like TV shows out there. It's really, really good, actually. They started off being like a parody, but then they took themselves a little bit more serious, and it actually came up with some really good episodes.
I think you're the only person on Earth that watched it besides Seth MacFarlane.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Pretty popular, and that's why they brought it back for a third season.
Did William Shatner do a cameo on it?
No, but there was a lot of Next Generation stars that lended their talents to direct. Like Jonathan Franks from Next Generation. He directed a number of episodes.
You know where I'm going with this.
There's only one Star Trek, and it's the original series with William Shatner.
No Shatner, no Star Trek. That's right. Captain Steubing is not Captain Kirk.
Dorks.
I hold very, very...
Where's Gopher and Doc?
That's right. That's right. I just watched Love Boat today, too, ironically enough. And we're getting sidetracked here.
You just dated yourself.
I did. Man. I love me some Love Boat.
Love Boat.
So,
the worst kind of dorks.
What kind of family for an 8-year-old buys you a teddy bear? I mean, isn't that something that would get your butt kicked even as an elementary school kid?
Well, especially when you look at some of the other presents, some of the other kids are getting. The one kid gets a Nintendo.
Right.
And he gets a teddy bear and he's
all
so happy.
All the big stuff of 85 or whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah. He gets a little teddy bear.
The thing that causes me to just laugh out loud, and I almost have to stop the movie every time I watch it, is when Ted comes in and scares the parents. And he's like, get the gun! Get the gun!
Get the gun! I love it when the parents are like, you know, whatever his wife's thing is, like, you know, those veneers are great. You know?
Oh, yeah.
It's just so wrong. My man deserves a treat.
It's from the devil.
That's right. That's right.
And then she basically calls him like, it's like baby Jesus.
Baby
you're
Jesus,
just like
yeah.
Little baby Jesus. Yeah.
That's right.
And then we know we're in for something really bad.
Oh, and then you got all the, he grows up, and then you got all the TV reporters, like the Chinese one or the Japanese one, where he like
yeah.
slaps the,
yeah.
Look what Jesus created. Look what Jesus created. Yes.
Yeah. And then he goes on Carson's show. And yeah. I think that was the episode of Carson with Webster.
Emmanuel Lewis.
Lewis. It comes off, if you know that, it comes off being very
perfect,
very bad on Johnny Carson's part about saying stuff like, I thought you would be taller. It almost feels like he was degrading him for being short. There's some things here that you know, kind of a little bit cringe at.
I don't cringe at any of it. Nope.
I think some of it, you don't cringe any of
nope.
it.
Nope, not a
so
thing.
So when they say stuff like when she says that they're going to have turkey brothers tonight, he's like, oh, so we're having homosexuals over?
Nope, don't cringe at all because I am.
Not cringe.
I love stereotypes and I'm an equal opportunity offender. And that doesn't bug me, not at all. I think it's funny because it is exactly what I would expect from a Seth MacFarlane movie. This is pretty much just real life Family Guy. Let's be honest.
Right.
What? I remember the hype surrounding this before it came out.
Oh, it's huge.
Because Seth MacFarlane, correct me if I'm wrong, this is his directorial debut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's only done like animation stuff up to this point, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people knew that this was going to be vulgar. Because especially with the humor that comes out of Family Guy, people know that there are going to be lines that are going to be crossed. So there was a lot of hype, good and bad, on this coming into its release. And it only, I think, helped the box office draw with that kind of hype.
The success of Family Guy was what really catapulted this to the next level. And here's the thing. If you're not expecting something and it's offensive, that's completely different than when you know what you're going into. If you know what you're going into, you can't be offended. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's just not how that works. It's like turning on a George Carlin album. You know there's going to be something offensive, but you go in knowing that. It's not like they're springing something on you like out of nowhere. Seth MacFarlane is going to push the boundaries. He's going to push your limits as to what you find funny. And that's what I find funny.
And if he's not your cup of tea, well,
see, I'm going to disagree with you guys, because then that's almost saying like, well, you can then trash it if you don't see it.
People
did that. But I think you should see it and judge for yourself. It's like for me with Life of Brian, Monty Python, Life of Brian. Find 95% of that movie hilarious. And some things offend a lot of people. The only thing that offends me is at the end, they're on the cross singing "Look at the Bright Side of Life." That,
you know what? That song offends me. That it's song annoys
hilarious.
The hell out of me.
It's okay though to go
it's
to a
hilarious.
Movie and watch a movie and be offended by it. It's okay to be offended by a movie.
Right.
I don't see a problem with it. People can say, you know what? I watched a movie. I was offended by this. Hey, that's you. That's your cup of tea. It hit a different chord with you than it did with other people. I think that's okay to actually trash the movie after you've seen it if you didn't like it.
It's the reason that Blazing Saddles and Airplane are still funny. I mean,
how about the airplane reference in this movie, too?
Oh, yeah,
that
yeah,
was
yeah,
just
yeah.
beautifully done. Just dead on.
No, that's why those movies are still funny.
Exactly.
It's because you know it's pushing. And in the case of Blazing Saddles, which turns 50 this year, if you can imagine that.
That's crazy, right?
Check that episode on that.
Yeah.
It's the fact that they're making fun of people who are racist.
Exactly.
And that's exactly what Seth MacFarlane's doing. He's pushing the boundaries. He's pushing to see how far you will find something funny. And I think people who do that are more intelligent. The humor is more intelligent. And I don't remember people being all outraged about this movie.
I do.
You know,
I do.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Everyone I hung out with loved it. They're like, oh, yeah. But I remember the parents saying, eh.
Well, don't show it to your preteen child.
He does throw things at the wall to offend almost anyone. And
exactly.
It's okay, like I said, it's okay to be offended because not all the jokes that he has stick. They just don't. It's kind of like we talk about Airplane and Blazing Saddles. The great movies, iconic. Some of the jokes don't stick the landing, but they're thrown at you at so many jokes a minute that the jokes that don't work, you don't notice it because another joke is right there to kind of take its place. So,
sure. We talked about this with Pee-wee and we've talked about it with the other comedies we've done. Comedy is subjective. My personal humor is I like comedians and comics and movies that push the boundaries. That push me to the limit where it's like, okay, yeah, that's offensive, but it's also pretty fucking funny. That's where my humor lies. It hits every note for me, this movie.
I think it's good to be offensive if you're smart with it. To be offensive just to be offensive isn't good. But, you know, Seth MacFarlane is one of those guys. There's some type of, like, educational humor behind some of the stuff that he does. It makes it not just, I'm going to try to offend somebody. It's legitimately funny for other reasons than just trying to offend.
It's why Lisa Lampanelli is not as funny as she could be. Because I believe that Lisa Lampanelli is just being vulgar just to be vulgar.
I would say the same about Andrew Dice Clay 30 years ago. We all know it was an act, but, you know, his nursery tales or nursery rhymes was his big gig. He was a one-trick pony comedian.
What happened with the Dice Man was the Dice Man was a character.
Right.
And ultimately what happened was he got caught up in the character. He couldn't escape the character.
Correct.
Nobody wanted him. They wanted
Andrew
they
Dice
wanted
Clay.
No, that's not his real name. He has a Jewish last name.
Yeah, because he
Rubenstein,
was in,
I think.
He was great in.
Star is Born.
Star is Born. Thank you. It was the father. Yeah. Yes, he was incredible in that.
If you talk to anybody in Hollywood, he is the nicest, most giving person ever, and completely not the Dice Man, but. Unfortunately,
well, the Dice Man is an era that's gone. That's forgiven. It's gone.
Like Paul Rubens.
Yeah,
he was making
fun of him.
Yes, the humor of Seth MacFarlane. I don't consider this lowbrow humor. I consider this very intelligent, somewhat sophisticated humor.
Right, and that's why I'm saying. As far as Andrew Dice Clay, actually, his real name is Andrew Clay, so he used his middle name as his stage last name.
Okay,
and then it's Silverstein.
Silverstein,
that's right.
That's
right, yeah. Good save, Ken.
And unfortunately for him, he got the character just consumed everything. When he was in public, he had to be the Dice Man. Otherwise,
just
people...
Just like Pee-wee Herman, yeah.
Nobody wanted Andrew Silverstein. They
wanted him doing Hamlet off-Broadway, right?
Maybe
Hickory
want
Dickory
that.
Doc. They wanted nursery rhymes.
That's the evolution of Andy Kaufman, except Andrew Dice Clay got caught up in the character and couldn't escape the character for 25 years. People yelled and screamed about Dice and everything, but it's actually really intelligent.
Yell and scream about Seth MacFarlane. They really
Not
didn't.
Really.
It's
they
the next didn't. Evolution. The fact that Dice got kicked off of Saturday Night Live. Nobody's going to kick Seth MacFarlane off Saturday Night Live.
Seth MacFarlane is intelligent to know. I mean, obviously, Family Guy was running on network television. So you have your boundaries that network television will allow you to do. And Seth MacFarlane knows that. He knows if he was on SNL or some show. I see it. He was on Bill Maher last week. Very interesting guest, very well spoken and
very polite. He's one of the most very polite, polite people,
and yet he still threw a few sarcastic jabs in there and people laughed. I mean, but mm-hmm. his timing, Seth MacFarlane's timing and his writing is incredible.
It's also a different age too. I mean, we're talking about 80s heyday where you had a lot more censorship than you do now. And that can happen because of Fox, one of the TV networks that basically kind of pushed the boundaries a little bit more.
Sure.
Right. They had to.
Simpsons, Tracy Ullman, all of it.
Yeah.
Married with Children. God, remember when Married with Children, Living Color, those shows were revolutionary. And then Arsenio Hall.
And Living Color is the reason we have a Super Bowl halftime show.
Going back to the movie itself, because that's mm-hmm. what we need to be doing. I wish there was a little bit more of finding out Ted's celebrity life, you know, just giving us a little bit more than what they did. I know it's very short.
Between eight and 35 years, that 27-year period, like him strung out on cocaine and screwing hookers and what have you.
Right. I mean, because later on we find out about Norah Jones and things of that nature. Right. I'd like to know how he put himself in those type of positions to meet famous people. And I don't need a lot, but maybe 5 minutes. Maybe he was on a short-lived sitcom for a very short period of time.
Flashbacks.
Yeah, something simple as that. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. But then you go 27 years. I don't know. The problem I have with John Bennett is, okay, you're 35. You're dating a very, very attractive woman.
Who puts up with a lot of shit.
Puts up with a lot of crap with your teddy bear who... You know, brings prostitutes over that happen.
You're
to
scared of thunder.
Crap over the phone. Yeah, you did. And you have to sing that thunder song. And I'm sorry,
right. 35.
But that's a stupid thunder song. I'm sorry, but that I don't know when they created it. When he was 8 years old. See, when he's 8 years old, he sounds like he's very innocent. I know the TV series. His mom is kind of very Christian oriented and doesn't swear. And I've only watched a few episodes of the TV show. It's okay. It's all right. It does have a different flavor. Because this movie is not careful about offending people. It doesn't care. The TV show cares about offending people. They've kind of twisted it a little bit to say, this is okay, I'm supportive of this, blah, blah, blah. Instead of making fun of all of us, they then start worrying about...
It takes away from it
a little bit, yeah. And I think that's why I'm only doing 3 episodes so far into the show, because it just doesn't have the same... flavor as the original movie. But John's character, I mean, 35
it's
years old.
It's a frustrating
old,
character.
It's a very frustrating character.
I understand where he yells at Ted after the Sam Jones party. Ted didn't twist his arm to make him go over there.
He really, really begged him, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, it was an opportunity to meet Sam Jones. He wasn't going to go over there anyway.
I would. He's not even my favorite actor, favorite movie, you know, but I would have gone over just to see what's going on.
It's a little bit overly harsh. That was the final straw that, you know.
He's got this great girlfriend. He works at a rent-a-car place, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. Even she says, I don't care if he's a janitor, but he doesn't take his job, you know, seriously. He's not on time. He messes around. He leaves early, you know, fakes being sick. His character is not, I don't think it's very likable. And to a certain extent, I mean, we don't want her to start dating her boss, but you know, and I know that he loves her, but if he truly loved her, he would make an effort in his own career life.
And he wouldn't have to question whether or not after 4 years of dating, if he should be proposing.
If I was dating her, it'd be 4 days. I mean,
well,
she's pretty hot.
I mean, it's Mila Kunis. The character that I would like to have a little bit more with is the Patrick Warburton character guy.
Oh, he's the best.
I adore Patrick Warburton.
I do too.
I think he is hilarious in every single thing he's ever done. He's brilliant as the Tick.
I'm a Seinfeld man myself.
I loved him in Seinfeld as Putty. High five. I loved his sitcom that he had. That I thought he was hilarious.
He just has that great delivery. You know, it's that deadpan.
So deadpan. Yes.
Yeah. I got Ryan Reynolds here, and you know, I just found out that I'm gay. Who would have known?
He's just got that deadpan humor.
Yeah.
You know, feels like an Arby's night.
Like that. So. Like, doesn't he say, like, I was dating this girl for like 6 months or something like that, and then she farted and I left.
Right.
What is she, Italian?
Yeah. There you go, man. See, if Fenty, another ethnicity. It's beautiful.
You could stick the ring up her ass and have her fart it out.
Right. It's just great.
Yeah, and then you have Ted, who drives with those like pedal things.
Gotta say Ted the human. So.
And then gets into that accident there, right at the rental car. But nothing really happens. Boss comes out and really just doesn't care, I guess. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of the John character. I want him to be smarter. I want him to be a little bit more worthy of the girl that he's dating a little bit. It gets worse in Ted 2. They even make him even dumber in the second movie. But in this movie, I just give him some smarts.
What the movie does is it banks on you're supposed to feel sorry for him from the beginning of the movie. They put all of that emotional currency in the bank. They play on it too much because he does push it. But I think that they have to put that emotional currency at the beginning so you don't completely just hate him. Because you do kind of feel sorry for him. It makes you understand when there are relatively serious moments where he's like, he was my only friend. So you understand that because from the beginning of the movie. And even though the beginning of the movie is hilarious, you understand where he's coming from. It's really hard for him to break any ties with Ted. It works on a couple of different levels, but I understand what you're saying, that there are definite times where he needs to be smarter. There's points where you feel like he's never matured.
And then you have to say to yourself, is that because of Ted? You know, and that's what the movie kind of puts Laurie in that position that with Ted not being around, does he get his life together?
He doesn't.
But without Ted, would he though? And I think the answer is probably yes. You don't want her to be the bad guy. But in parts of this movie, you feel like she is the bad guy.
She has to be. She wants him. She doesn't want the bear because she knows that if they get engaged or move in, but if they get engaged, that Ted's going to be with him wherever. And she wants him to have his independence from Ted.
Yeah, I never get the feeling that she's a bad guy because you understand and sympathize with her. The only real bad guy here is Rex, her manager.
Well, the guy who kidnaps Ted.
Oh, well.
That creepy guy.
Wow.
I know, right? Singing to Tiffany.
Oh, my God. That is so reminiscent of Buffalo Bill and Silence of the Lambs.
That's exactly what I was thinking, too.
It's just... Can you imagine what that kid would do to me?
Oh, my goodness.
I love that scene on the park bench.
Yeah.
And he goes... Don't you talk to me that way. He goes, what the fuck?
By the way, why don't they make Ted clean up the fucking shit that's on the floor from the prostitute?
You would think, right? You would think.
He doesn't have fingers.
Oh, but he can work a cash register at a grocery store? Come on. There's got to be ways to figure this out.
That's still funny.
He's having sex without a penis. There's ways to get around this. He could actually pick up that poop.
I just always thought it was odd.
I fucked her with
that...
a parsnip, and then I fed it to a
family. That takes guts. I always thought it was weird that everyone in the world accepted him, a little teddy bear. He's like the only teddy bear in the world, apparently, who came to life.
Why are there scientists, you know, trying to dissect this thing that came to life?
Why are they trying to kidnap him like E.T.?
That's a different
movie.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Only one person in the last 27 years has got a fixation on Ted. That's unreasonable. Come on.
Okay, so we've brought up this 27 years. You do see the ironic correlation between when John's mom calls Ted baby Jesus.
Yes.
And we skip 27 years and Ted's supposed to be 33. You get that, right?
33 years old, yes.
Exactly.
I guess I'm not getting it.
Jesus is 33 years old.
Jesus was 33.
When he died.
Why is he 33? John is 35.
Because he's younger than John.
But it's 27 years later, so he should be 27 years old, right? The age thing of Ted also was weird because he starts off with that high-pitched voice and then becomes a much darker, deeper voice down the road.
Yes.
Well, but does Ted age, though?
Well, we have to have Seth MacFarlane do the Peter Griffin voice, so.
Maybe it should have been that voice throughout the whole time frame, I'm saying.
It would be really freaking weird if it was a kid's voice that was saying all these crude jokes, dude. That True. Would be almost crazy. That would
actually,
almost
that might
be
make it a little bit
line.
Funnier. Because that would make it South Park-ish.
That might push it just a slight bit too far.
I don't know. When did they learn that stupid song? You know, when they were probably little kids. I don't think it's something that they came up with as adults. Well, maybe. I wouldn't put it past them.
I love the names of the weed that he gets from his dealer.
Permanent.
This is permanent. They're coming for me. They're coming for me. And then the white trash woman names. That's pretty funny too.
Ted sounds like he gets away with murder, and it's got to be Lori's house. It's got to be Lori's apartment. She's the one
they
that's
share
making
it.
The money.
Don't they share it together?
I'm sure they share it together, but his general manager at his rent-a-car place is making $39,000. How much is he making?
Not much.
Because they're not living much. In a nice apartment in Boston.
But she,
well, she's
she makes,
vice president.
Yeah, she makes good money.
That's what I'm saying. She makes the money. And she kicks him out. I think she's the breadwinner here. You know, how they allow Ted to have prostitutes over and just let Ted get away with just whatever they want. This shit's been going on for 4 years. Them getting high all the time, 4 years of it. And she's been putting up with it all this time. I'm sorry, but it could be 4 months and she could have left and I would have understood. 4 years, I mean, they're making her out to be a saint almost.
Well, I don't think hookers came over and took shits on the floor every night, so...
No, it's not just but I mean, you got to think of what did Ted get away with all the way up to this particular point. Because she's already wanting Ted to leave before this happens. The prostitute shitting on the floor basically gave John no choice but to find him an apartment. Yeah, but she already wanted him out. So there was other crap I'm sure that he did that she didn't like either. And it's probably mostly the pot smoking and not taking life seriously because that's all they do is sit around watching SpongeBob on TV and
smoking weak pot.
Eating what it looks like to be Little Debbie's snack cake.
Well, that kind of comes with the smoking pot part.
I wouldn't know. So we talked about Tom Skillet and at the end joke about, you know, everybody seems to be friends
Tom
with
Skerritt.
Tom Skillet. Skerritt.
Not to tell you, Skillet. Tom Skerritt, not Tom Skillet.
Sorry.
Tom Skilling.
Skerritt.
But it's funny because he doesn't get the Top Gun reference.
No, he doesn't.
He's like, okay, Goose. And he's like,
Did you notice the photo? The head was completely photoshopped on?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
So badly exactly. photoshopped on, too.
When we see that photo in Lori's boss's house. I would have liked to have seen it one or two other places just to have fun with it. Like when we one more time at the grocery store with that general manager, maybe there's a picture on his desk as well. And Tom Skerritt, he looks like he can kill over at any time in this particular movie.
Yeah, he's
I know. Is he still alive?
Yeah, Tom Skerritt's still alive, yeah.
I don't know. He looked like he was
going to be
the big one.
But Maverick.
That was 12 years ago when that movie came out. He's still alive.
Okay.
Maybe they'll bring him back for the Top Gun 3 sequel.
No, that's so bad.
The Top Gun 2 sequel.
So bad.
Don't say that.
For me, this movie really doesn't take off until they get to the Sam Jones part.
Oh, no. Yeah. It takes off from day one. From
scene one. Or at least it's elevated by the time we get there. Because
the Sam Jones is just perfect.
The whole party sequence is freaking hilarious.
Yes.
We should open up an Italian restaurant if we're going to do it.
And
we'll let Jews in.
Everybody's welcome.
Everybody's welcome.
Everybody's
we'll
welcome.
Let Jews. We'll let Jews. Why say that?
Why would you say that?
We're not saying that. So
it's but you did.
And then they end up with
no Mexicans. Yes.
Well, you're not going to get anybody to work in there. Then you're going to go out of business.
Wow.
Exactly. Wow. There we go. Continuing the trend.
And then they make fun of what you do when you're on cocaine, some stupid shit, and they go straight to the karaoke.
Yes, exactly. Oh, yes. Singing. Hootie and the Blowfish.
But it's so funny because I love it when he gets to the part doing karaoke where he's like, and you could sing every 90s song without even using consonants.
Right.
The fact that he allowed them to make fun of him and his past and his drug use past and his role.
His past being Flash Gordon, pretty much.
Being Flash Gordon and just going with it. He, you know, to get him to do that is kind of amazing. He takes it and runs with it extremely well. I mean,
yeah, he's got a sense of humor.
He's a funny guy, man. He's got a good sense of humor.
Punches right through the wall. Yeah. And then you have the guy next
landlord.
Door.
Yeah, the landlord with the duck.
Is he a landlord? With the
I think he's the landlord, yes.
Yeah.
I think he's the landlord.
About ready to cook my dinner. And it's
yeah,
the duck.
He's got the one the duck. Yeah.
Is it the
But then, wait, what is the duck's name? He calls it. He's like, come
John
here.
John Franco?
Yes, John Franco. John the Franco. Duck, yeah.
But then, of course, his name is last name is Ming.
Ming, and it says off, yeah.
Death to Ming.
And he's talking to him, and he has that, like, hallucination with him in the big Ming outfit. Oh, it's beautiful.
Fun. It's funny cool. stuff. Yeah. I don't know. After that, I think it takes too much of a serious turn.
When Ted's abducted?
Yeah, we could talk a little bit about that more in part two.
We should probably
two.
Go into part two here.
Well, we have to talk about Lance Armstrong's nut.
Of course.
Sometimes you feel like a nut and sometimes you don't.
Right, right. Gold-plated.
The Rex character is kind of... perfect. I mean, it is kind of perfect because you don't like him. And you're not supposed to like him. He has no redeeming qualities.
None.
The parents own the company. And
yeah,
he's
yeah,
kind
exactly.
Like,
yes, he's the kid. Yeah. Well, he's done
he's
nothing
a freak,
with his life.
Too. Because he's... comes and sniffs the seat after she gets up and walks out of the door.
And he's screwing all the employees like in the bathroom at work.
Of
and
course.
Then they're like, you've never been here before? No.
Well, it was in the handicap stall, so it was, you know, it's higher class.
Exactly, exactly. It's like, it's beautiful writing.
There's not one aspect of this movie that's not funny.
I think it misses its mark from time to time, but in general, I think it hits the mark often enough, at least for me. It's always 5 minutes. John's always going to, you know, be 5 minutes. It's going to be 5 minutes. You're going to leave work and come, you know, come over to Ted's place, and that's going to be only for 5 minutes. And then you're going to meet Sam Jones, and it's only going to be for 5 minutes. It's always
like
5 minutes.
Sam Jones
never is 5 minutes, and you know, I don't blame her for breaking up with him. He could,
no.
You know what? He could have gone to her and said, "Hey, Sam Jones, you know how much I love Flash Gordon, right? Sam Jones is actually at Ted's place. You want to go?" She probably would have gone with him. She knows that movie. She loves him.
Yeah, and she didn't want to be at that party anyway.
No.
No, she did not, but she still
and
wanted
so
him there.
It's the conflict that has to happen so you get the happy ending at the end.
Which is from Ted, too.
A little bit, right.
Yeah. When I read the reason why Mila Kunis didn't come back for Ted 2, because she was pregnant and couldn't film, you could have worked that into the script, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just wait until she's had the baby? And then,
she's got a professional career. She could be out of the country.
Right.
You know, there's so many things that you could have done.
There's ways they could have worked around it.
But having them divorced because she want John to change, the whole point of this first movie is to accept John for what he is and John trying harder. I hate sequels that crap on the original movie. Just takes away from the first movie, unfortunately. So, and it's still a little bit funny that Ted 2, but we need to finish Ted 1 here before
Let's go into part 2, man.
All right. Ted informs John that Laurie and Rex are on a date together, though it leads to them arguing. But after a violent brawl, they reconcile. To repair John's relationship with Laurie, Ted arranges for an old lover of his, singer Nora Jones, to help by having John express his love for Laurie with a song during Nora's concert, which Laurie and Rex are attending. He does an off-key rendition of All Time High by Rita Coolidge, the theme song from Octopussy, that Laurie and John watched together on their first date. He is booed off stage as a result, though Laurie is touched by the attempt. Ted confesses his role in John's relapse and offers to leave them alone forever if Laurie talks to John. Ted is then abducted by Donnie, a mentally unstable stalker who idolizes Ted as a child. Donnie plans to make Ted into his brutish son's Robert's new toy. Eric would say sex toy.
Yeah.
Ted reaches a phone to contact John, but is recaptured by Donnie and Robert. John and Laurie locate Donnie's residence and track him. They chase them to Fenway Park, where Donnie rips Ted in half. John and Laurie gather Ted's stuffing and Ted relays his wish that Johnny be happy with Lori before the magic in him fades away, making him a normal teddy bear again. Unwilling to lose Ted, John and Lori unsuccessfully attempt to repair him. Lori makes a wish on a shooting star while John is asleep. The next morning, Ted is revived as a result of the wish and reunites with John and Lori, encouraging them to resume their relationship. John then proposes to Lori, and she accepts. Sometime later, John and Lori are married, and Ted accepts having a life of his own as he and Tammy Lynn continue their love affair. The narrator of the film provides the following. Sam Jones attempts to restart his film career and moves into a studio apartment with Brandon Routh, who starred in the god-awful Superman movie. I don't know if it was that god-awful, but it wasn't that great either. Rex gives up his pursuit of Lori, falls into a deep depression, and dies of Lou Gehrig's disease, which which John wished upon him earlier in the movie.
Oh, my goodness. So, oh, boy. Lou Gehrig's disease.
Donnie's arrested by the Boston Police Department for kidnapping Ted, but the charges are dropped because how ridiculous the situation sounded. Robert hires a personal trainer, loses a significant amount of weight, and goes on to become Tyler Lautner, the guy from those Twilight movies. And that is the end of Ted. Sorry, Ted.
Yeah, that's the way it goes. But this has my fun, the thing that I find the funniest, I almost can't finish the movie, is when Ted comes back to life and he starts telling him why. You put something in your wrong spot. I almost fall out of the chair every time I watch the movie. It makes me laugh so hard. What's interesting is because I showed this to my daughter. She got so upset when Ted got ripped in half.
Like, seriously?
Yes. Like,
it's very depressing.
She was heartbroken. And, mm-hmm. and she loves the movie. She absolutely thought it was hilarious. No surprise given who her parents are.
Of course.
And, she was so upset.
Like I'm just tears, like, I had tears of a clown.
Yeah, almost. Wow. And I had to calm her down. I'm like, just watch. But yeah, I wasn't expecting that. But yeah, she was very upset.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's actually it's supposed to be moving. It's supposed to drive an emotion right to you. He just lost his best friend. It's kind of like for me, or you know, for you guys, maybe losing a pet. You know, somebody that's been with you for so many years and it's been by your side. I understood the emotion because I got a little, like, I wouldn't say a full-blown cry, but I got a little emotional when seeing that part. So I get where she's coming from on that. I think it's ridiculous that they somehow got into Fenway Park and started running around there. And,
yeah, it was pretty easy to get into Fenway, wasn't it?
Yeah, you just have to sneak underneath the garage. That's what
pretty
that's
much,
left open.
Right.
The Cathedral of Boston.
Yes.
You'd think that the place would be like, that it would be locked down. I guess the police finally figure out to show up somehow. I don't know
somehow,
who calls them.
Yeah.
Well, he does crash the car. So somebody probably
does.
Airbags right? deployed yeah. and everything. Yeah.
It's funny because they're doing all this in front of Fenway Park, but there's nobody around. I'm sorry, but I would think there's at least people
yeah. I mean, come
walking
on,
around Fenway Park all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure there are.
When is this set anyway? It's got to be spring, summer, or fall because it's never there's never snow or jackets or anything like that.
No, it's got to be. So you think Fenway would be open, right? They're probably on the road,
and they might be on the road, but you know people would be walking around Fenway. I mean, just taking pictures of Fenway while they're gone. I mean, it's and all the lights are on, which is not uncommon. I mean, I drive sometimes past Guaranteed Rate Field. And their lights are on during the season, and they're not playing. Because I think it's more expensive to shut it down
it is.
And turn the lights back on.
Well, people will rob it if they think it's dark.
True that. But then maybe they should
keep the lights on
and
think someone's there.
I'd have a welcome mat that says, hey, the garage door is open. Just sneak in through right here.
Yeah.
I love it when Mark Wahlberg knocks the kid out.
Yeah, it's just boom, yeah.
That kid is weird.
Kid is really weird.
I mean, of course, his dad's weird. Yeah. Because Donnie's, and you guys were mentioning about him dancing to the Tiffany song earlier.
Oh, my God.
Very creepy.
But it's weird that he gives the doll to his son because it's his obsession. It's always been his obsession.
But he wants the best for his son.
But does he? Because, I mean, he crashes that car like 2 to 3 times. But the son in the car, he doesn't think of his son's safety. All he cares about is that bear. I mean, he slams on the brakes so John and Lori would hit him,
right?
And send Ted right through the window again. He's endangering his son multiple times. He doesn't care about his son. He really doesn't. All he cares about is Ted.
Well, I think let's don't dive into the psychology of Donnie.
Oh,
but
oh,
I think he does want what's best.
No, for he doesn't.
No.
Remember Robert's talking to him because Ted swore? And
oh, yeah.
He talked about how he got. He ripped his ear off. But it wonders what happened to Robert when he got punished for swearing.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah.
It didn't sound good. And then, cutting off the ear, I'm just, not a good dad. Not a good dad in any type of way.
No.
Probably ended up killing his wife or something.
Well, look at his dad. His dad was having sex right behind him as he was watching TV.
Yes. Your new mama.
Right.
I guess I don't know that part. Is that the unrated version?
Maybe that wasn't the unrated version.
Oh,
maybe that is. Yeah,
he's watching TV. He's like, Daddy, I want
he's
a teddy bear.
He's watching the Carson show.
He's watching the Carson show, yeah. And he's like, leave me alone. Yeah.
We get that Donnie's messed up. That should have been actually left in the movie. I mean, it's not any more offensive than anything else in the movie.
Not at all.
But they're just creepy. It's funny because Robert and Donnie are the names of Mark Wahlberg's two brothers.
So he's saying that his brother
and that was on purpose. That was on purpose.
Got some mental issues. Is that what he's saying?
No. But that was he named them that way on purpose. It's pretty funny.
I think the second half, the biggest problem I have is with him singing All Time High. I know it's supposed to be brutal and supposed to show us
Rita
love.
Coolidge, man. You don't like hilarious. Rita Coolidge?
No, I don't have a problem with the song. I have a problem with him going on stage to sing
it's
that
hilarious.
Song.
It's hilarious. He can't hold a tune. Yeah, it is.
How is it hilarious?
It's one of the worst James Bond songs.
I'm not going to argue with you on that because it's one of the worst James Bond movies. But
how dare you diss Roger Moore and Rita Coolidge?
Yes. Any chance I get with Roger Moore. He should have stopped playing James Bond 3 films in. He was already too old to play it when he got hired.
Dare you.
Grandpa Bond.
Well, the person who owns the licensing rights doesn't license out James Bond stuff very often, and they gave the okay for this. They didn't have a problem with it.
Well, good for them, I guess.
I think it's funny. I think it's funny that Ted knows Nora Jones.
I don't have a problem with Ted knowing Nora Jones and stuff like that. It just could have been done differently. Yes, he got booed off the stage. I think he knocked out a fan who tried to like take him out.
You just want to watch a guy almost die on stage.
Yeah, it's a rough crowd.
Yeah, they're very supportive at first. And they turn on really
that's
bad.
What makes it funny, because if somebody gets up there to do that, everybody's going to cheer for them, but he's so bad that the crowd turns on him. That's what's funny about
it. Would have been funnier if he sang really well, like they dubbed his voice, and all of a sudden
Wahlberg probably can sing very
like
well,
sounds
considering
like Bob Goulet or
he
something.
Was Marky Mark.
Well, just because you're rap doesn't mean you can sing.
Not necessarily, but Mark Wahlberg is insanely talented at everything he does. I'm sure he could probably sing.
Just like I could sing, but that doesn't mean I can actually talk well. Podcast. Good example.
Well, we know you can't talk well.
That's true. And just the rest of the movie is just...
They're not making fun of the song.
He's just brutal. He's just brutal. And I get that, but I just felt like there would have been a better, funnier way to kind of make that all happen. Because I think the second half of this movie is a snooze fest. It's not funny anymore. It's very serious. You know, you got the kidnapping situation. You got John and Lori on the rocks. There's no real big jokes going on in the second half of the film. It's a little too serious, I think, for me in the second half.
I think they break up the kidnapping tension pretty well with some well-timed jokes. Ted being sarcastic. Yeah, I get what you're saying. There's a different tone to the second half of the movie, but there are still some really funny stuff going on.
You're going to have to tell me which parts, because I guess I missed that part.
Well, here again, it's subjective. I'm not going to sit here and make the case that it's funny because you don't find it funny.
I don't think they even try to be funny in the second half. I don't know what you're...
Oh, they do.
I know he makes some jokes about being kidnapped and where he's at and saying a rocking chair upstairs. Punching out
the kid is funny.
Yeah, it's funny to a certain extent, but at the same time, it's more because we're just happy that he shut the kid up because that kid was a spoiled little brat. But for me, it wasn't funny. It was more like, yay, you took out the kid. I didn't find it funny, but I thought, yeah, good for you. You shut the kid up. The second half is just not funny. I think it doesn't even get funny again until like Ted's favorite part, I guess, when he pretends that he got the wrong stuffing in certain places and pretends, and he says that it went all retard on you. I don't know if that joke would go well now. I don't know if he would be able to say
it's funny. Trust me, it's funny.
I don't know if it would fly now. I don't think Seth MacFarlane of 2024 would actually use the word retard now.
Yeah, maybe not.
He might not.
But he might. I
Peter
don't know.
Griffith will.
Yeah, Peter Griffin will. There are some sarcastic remarks and quips that Ted makes that are pretty funny. But there is a more serious tone. You're exactly right.
The first half of the movie's like out of control.
It's like, let's throw whatever and see what sticks.
Everything's going, right.
Like when Ted intends at the grocery store and he meets
Tammy Lynn.
And he tries to see what he can get away with. And then he squirts all that soap all over his face to make it look like that. Yeah. So that's where we draw the line.
I like it when he's naming all the girls' names, just like rattling them off. That was genius writing.
The first part of the movie is like Chevy Chase going down the hill and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation on the disc. It hits a point where it slows down. If there's a part that doesn't land for me, it's the Ted and John fight in the hotel room. And I know that that's a play on an episode from The Family Guy where Peter fights the chicken. The
chicken all the time, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's heartbreaking to a certain sense because these are two of the best buds and they're like really going at it. I mean,
Ted's really throwing some punches.
Ted fucking ruck spin.
Right. But there's no marks.
It would have been better if they would have made it a little bit more comedic. It wasn't very comedic. It was very brutal. I think if you would have made it a little bit funnier, there's got to be a way to make it.
They try to make it funny with the dick joke at the end.
Well, that's the other thing. He drops the TV on his dick and it explodes on his dick. There's got to be some kind of damage going on here. I know he's Mark Wahlberg, but
he is Dirk Diggler after all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and Eric hasn't seen Boogie Nights, but if you saw Boogie Nights, you would know what we're talking about.
I've seen probably 10 or 15 cuts and scenes of the movie.
But I've never seen it
all the way through.
Okay, so Eric.
Yeah, I've seen the prosthetic.
You're saying you've not watched the movie.
All the way through.
But you watched this one particular part.
I've watched scenes of it that are...
Now, how often do you rewind and fast forward to that scene?
I have the 4K, 4K cuts.
It's got a little special little scan disc thing that he just puts in, gives him the highlights.
I like how it ends.
Yeah.
I like the fact that Sam Jones marries them. He's the officiant at the wedding.
And what is he? He's by the power vested in me by the New York Jets. And the something church of, yes, it's the very funny.
That they were in.
Right. It is very funny. Flash Gordon. Yes. I almost think Sam Jones steals the movie.
I think he does.
Yeah.
Kudos to him. That's all I got to say. He's a good sport.
Show you how to party in style.
Right.
Right.
Because he's never done anything besides literally Flash Gordon. That's it.
Yeah.
It's his claim to fame and the fact that he has a really great sense of humor and plays along with everything. That party scene is just like the highlight of the movie. He's having like hallucinations and stuff. It's just beautiful.
Big kudos to him
because not
everybody would be game for that. I guess some of his family members weren't too happy with it, but
you know what happens.
So
he's the one who's got to answer for it. So
exactly, he's the one.
I'm sure he made a good payday. And you know what? Let's be honest. 2012, no one knew who he was. You know, this puts him back in the limelight.
It's probably what got the Blu-ray version of Flash Gordon made.
Flash Gordon, I got the 4K.
Oh, you got the 4K.
I got the 4K.
And that's going to be our next movie. We're going to be doing Flash Gordon. Fun fact, me and Ted, when we were creating this podcast, we did a trial run, and Flash Gordon was the movie that we picked. It was funny because we're like,
right?
It was like 3 hours of just a third of a movie.
Scene by scene.
So you burned that audio, right?
No, I still have it. I should play like little bits of it during the podcast.
Did you guys get past the opening?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
But I think it's time for the reviews.
Okay. I love this movie. No surprise. My film review that I am aligning with is Staff from Film Companion. It says, Ted gives us one of the greatest comedic characters, a lovable, foul-mouthed, cuddly toy full of memorable one-liners who armed us with an arsenal of handy insults. I don't think you can sum it up any better than that. I haven't seen this movie in probably, 5 or 6 years, and I was laughing from scene one. I forgot how funny this movie was. It was a walk down memory lane for me. I love this movie. I'll watch this thing over and over again when I need a good insult laugh. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. This is a movie that, as I call it, an equal opportunity offender. Can't be thin-skinned. You got to have a good sense of humor. And you have to be not afraid to really listen to some language, some insults, and some pretty crude humor. But, you know, that's my movie, man. I love it. This one, 4 hooks. What do you got, Ted?
Ted the Human, yes. My critic is Peter Travers from Rolling Stone. He said, Seth MacFarlane's debut as a feature director hits all the sweet spots that irritate prudes. Ted is hysterically gut-bustingly funny. I couldn't agree more. This movie hits every note for me. It pushes the envelope, which is my kind of humor. I laugh out loud, literally, so many times through this movie. While John's character does confuse me at times, I love all the characters here. I think it's hilarious. Seth MacFarlane is brilliant. His comedy is something that is long-lasting, too, and could live in just about any era. Like, he could have been part of the late 70s Saturday Night Live crew, or in the mid-80s with Dice and Kennison and all of those guys and Eddie Murphy. He's just hilarious. I don't see what's not funny about this movie. This movie is one of my favorites. The reason that this movie won't be higher, as far as my hooks go, is because The Hangover is still one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Oh, clearly a Hangover rocks.
And I can't wait till we review The Hangover because yes. I have the funniest story of when I took Ken to see The Hangover. But this movie is 4.5 hooks for me.
Nice.
It's hilarious. There's just times that I just want to watch this movie because it makes me laugh so hard. 4.5 hooks for me.
Sweet. All right, Ken, take us home. What do you got?
I got Donald Clark from Irish Times. He stated, there's just enough mileage in the gag to keep the movie spluttering through an energetic series of pop cultural references and broadly staged orgies of profanity. I like this movie. It is funny. There's a lot of jokes that do stick, especially for the first half of the film. Once we get past Sam Jones' cameo in this movie, I don't know if we want to call it a cameo or an actual role in the movie, but I'll say cameo.
Oh, no, it's more than a cameo. He actually has a substantial role.
Yeah,
well, they
he's
idolize
a character.
Him from the beginning. He's got like a 10-part in the middle, and he marries him at the end.
Yeah, but it's like probably 5 to 6 minutes of screen time at best. But anyway, I think he steals the movie, like you said a little bit earlier, Eric. He saves this movie for me because I think the movie is funny at times.
He saves every one of us.
Yeah, he saves every one of us. Anyway, Queen reference, thank you. But it does fall flat in the second half. It gets way too serious for its own good. The kidnapping story, the lover spat, maybe one or the other, but maybe not both. That's why I was saying earlier why I didn't care for the concert, because I thought they needed something a little bit more hilarious to offset the down mood that the second half of the movie is presenting. They say the first half of the movie is about 3.5 stars, and the second half of the movie is more like 2.5, 2 stars. So I'm going to fall right at 3 hooks. I enjoy it. Will I watch it again? I won't purposely put the movie in to watch it, but if it's on cable where actually you can get away with saying the words that they say on it, I'll watch it, but I won't go back to it.
Yeah, this movie, an edited version of this movie, is not even watchable.
There's no way.
You can't watch the edit. There's no way.
It would have to be a paid movie channel for me to watch.
Yeah, unless you want to make fun of it because of the bad editing job on it.
One of the worst things that I ever saw of that was, do you remember Spike TV before it turned into Paramount TV? They did a version of Reservoir Dogs. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
No, that and Blazing Saddles, that it is really, really bad too.
That's not for public
consumption. Or like a Porky's or something.
And again,
well, that's a whole nother level.
And then again, I hate the fact that Ted 2 just takes a prostitute shit on this movie.
Yeah, it happens.
On the floor, because...
But there's still very funny parts of Ted 2, though.
There's still very funny parts, but you took the heart and soul. You took the what you were aiming for in this movie, the relationship between, you know, John and Lori, and you threw it away. I hate when movies do that. Just don't do the movie.
Or just wait. Or just like wait. Like I said before. And so Mila Kunis could be in the movie.
Exactly.
Kind of like the narration at the end. That's
good. I thought it was kind of. It was. It was a good tie-up. It was a good tie-up of the loose ends of the movie up. All right, Ted, where can they find us on the World Wide Web?
We can be found on Twitter or X or whatever Elon's calling it now. At @hookedon_movies. We have discussions about different movies and updates on what we're doing and everything like that. But more importantly, whatever podcast version you're listening to us on, whether it be Good Pod, Spotify, Apple, if you can, leave us a 5-star rating and write us a review. Tell us what you think of Ted. What do you think is the funniest part? Or if you absolutely find it offensive beyond belief, just let us know. And it helps us get noticed. And you never know what might come of that.
That's why we do it. Ken, how are we doing there on Facebook? A lot of some great articles, a little bit of banter and feedback I noticed there on the old Facebook.
Yes, we're having fun on Facebook. So join us on Hooked on Movies. We discuss movies. There's trailers. There's fun little clips. Let's just come on in and enjoy the discussion. Come on in. The water's fine.
We promise we won't show the video of Ken dancing to Tiffany.
You have to pay extra for that.
That's a paid subscription. Yes.
Yes.
Very creepy. Very creepy. It puts the lotion in the bucket. So.
It rubs the lotion on itself. It just sounds good.
And we'd like to thank Justin for suggesting this movie of Ted. And the next movie that we're going to do, we said, is the 1980 Flash Gordon by our good friend Tom. So thank you, Tom, for suggesting Flash Gordon. It pairs up perfectly.
Beautifully.
Deaf to me.
It's almost like we planned it that way.
It's almost like that, yeah. It kind of feels that way. Well, awesome. Well, thank you, gentlemen. And as always, you know, this means something, what we do.
See you at the movies.
See you next time on Hooked on Movies.